Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, October 13th, 2008, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Hey, what's up, kiddo? Daddy says you're wearing a sad face.
No sad face here, ma'am, because I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Gosh, I'm so sorry I missed y'all last week. Sometimes my life is like a bad soap opera. However, to make up for my absence, I have a really remarkable show in store for you. Today, I bring you the second installment of my new series of interviews called The Erotic Mind. The idea behind this series of conversations with noted erotic artists of every stripe is to see if we can uncover something of the creative process involved in this specialized art form. Today, I have the distinct pleasure of introducing you to a world-class artist with a global reputation. He comes to us all the way from Cape Town, South Africa. My guest today is Moxie Hart. He is a visual artist who creates his erotica using predominantly oil on canvas, but he also sketches in charcoal and crafts in plexiglass. Y'all are going to have to visit him online at his own website at www.moxiehart.com. Moxie writes of his work, "Words are so restrictive. Merely utterances, black on white. Feeling is the language of the soul, and it's in big, bold, bright, fantastic technicolor. This is how I see. This is my world." Well, we'll be hearing a whole lot more from this fantastic artist in just a moment, but before we begin, a word from our sponsor. Today's podcast is appropriately brought to you by one of my all-time favorite sponsors, Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, and fetish gear right there at the top of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the My Stockroom tab. You'll enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun and, I might add, easy. Yesiree sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty sex toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts and unsavory neighborhoods. And you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer, that's why. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit My Stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did.
Kiddo, I understand how you feel, but you don't have to worry. I mean, one of these days you're going to be just as pretty as Mademoiselle, maybe prettier.
I think I'm just as pretty as I'm going to ever get. Okay. On with the show. Welcome, Moxie, and thank you for joining us. I'm so delighted that you could make this time to be with us, especially since you're on the other side of the world from me. Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
I sure would. Hi, Richard. Thanks very much, and a big shout out to everyone out there from sunny Cape Town, South Africa.
Ah! I've been spending a great deal of time on your website, moxiehart.com. It's such a fun place to visit. There is enough eye candy there to last for a very long time, and it's such a cheerful place on top of being so erotic. It appears that you really love your work. Is that true?
Well, thank you very much for the compliment about it being a fun place, all fluffy clouds and flying things. You know, I'd have to say it's really impossible for me to call what I do work. It's it's just passion. It's yes. I'm very lucky I get to do exactly what I love. So I do love my work.
So before we begin discussing erotic art in general and your work in particular, let's talk about you. Can you give us a brief bio?
Certainly can. It took a long time and a lot of stops in places I didn't really belong in to finally reach this space. but I believe you can never really escape your passion. If you're meant to do something, eventually you will end up doing just that, if you want to be happy. I studied art at an art college, and the lecturer one day told us the best job you could get as an artist was a window dresser.
Oh, my.
So that wasn't an idea that I really liked very much. So I decided to go study fashion design. Growing up not exactly wealthy, I wanted to have a career that would be financially viable. But, of course, I hated fashion. It's a world I just didn't fit in. But eventually it did stand me in good stead because I ended up working in shopping center display after all. And that led to designing and painting enormous backdrops for event companies. And later, I started my own business, an event design company, a career that would have led to an early death, I'm sure, due to the immense pressure it put on me. It was just an insane, insane job. But the painting of those enormous backdrops sort of awoke that love for painting in me again. So I started working on canvas, and before I knew it, I sold a couple of paintings, end up selling the event business, and moved to Cape Town to become a full-time artist. At first, I started still lifes and flowers and stuff like that, thinking that's the majority, what the majority of people would buy, but didn't make me happy at all. And about 3 years ago, in a rather serendipitous fashion, I met a sculptor from Texas that told me to paint what I love, that and only that. And the rest, as they say, is history. So that's a lot, but I tried to make it as short as possible.
That's great. So you were in Cape Town now, and where did you study? Where did you go to art school, did you say?
That was inland in Johannesburg. It's where I grew up, in a little town there, and first studied art in a small town there, and then fashion design in Johannesburg.
I see.
That's the sort of business hub of the country.
I
swapped that for Cape Town, lazy old seaside town, Cape Town. It's great. It's a good place to be an artist. Very inspiring.
I guess so. I mean, it's certainly clear from your artwork. So, if I understand correctly, then you took some detours before you became the artist that you are now. Is erotic art the only art that you do, or do you do a bunch of other kind of stuff?
I mainly focus on I would say homoerotic art. That's how I would describe
right.
my work. That's what I focus on. It's really, really what I love. It's just that it makes me so happy for various obvious reasons. But I do commissions. You know, that's sort of the kind of thing that keeps the butter on the bread.
Right.
So I do things like people's dearly departed pets and wealthy people's horses and things like that.
Right.
So I do that kind of stuff in between, but mainly whenever I work on an exhibition, it would be my homoerotic art.
I see.
But I did. It was a long, long, long road to eventually get to. Like I said, you know, a lot of people that are artistic, there's that stigma around being a suffering artist.
Yes.
So a lot of people try and avoid that and end up doing artistic things, you know, anything but what they should be doing. But like I say, you can't escape it. Eventually it will just haunt you and you'll be miserable and you end up doing what you love.
Well, may I ask your age?
I'm 33.
Ah, excellent. So you've been doing your passion for how many years again?
I would say the homoerotic stuff about 3 years now, full-time.
Well,
full-time. But painting in total, 5 years.
I see.
But like I said, I started doing decor things, still lives and flowers and crap like that. Not that kudos to the people that do it. I have a lot of respect for that, but it's just not my thing.
Yes. So. But interestingly enough, and I'm sure we'll flesh this out a little bit later, so to speak, but I noticed that you do incorporate some of, you know, like nature in your homoerotic art too. So kind of balances, you marry both of the the capacities that you have in your passion, which I think is quite amazing.
That is true. Those paintings of mine you referred to, I love that juxtaposition of the man, you know, the sort of masculine image with the flower, beautiful flower. And I guess my aim with that is to show that it's beauty, and the one is gentle and the other one is sort of rough. And if the masculine beauty could learn from the gentle beauty of a flower, the world would be a better place. So I guess that's sort of my profound statement with those paintings.
Where do you find your models? Or are they just in your head?
I wish. No, I don't have that kind of photographic memory. No. Up until recently, I've drawn inspiration from all over the place, photographs and sort of doing, mock-ups and things like that, wherever I can find it, really. But at the moment, I'm fortunate enough to have a number of people that either create new source material for me to work from, or I have existing work that I use. Seeing that I work from photographs and with the aid of the internet, I now have models all over the world. So I'm a very lucky man. I get sent all these beautiful images to work from.
Yeah,
so
bad
it's
luck
a good job.
For you, huh?
The good job.
Do you work with live models as well, or just photos?
No, I don't. Time these days doesn't really lend itself to it. You know, very few people really have the time to sit for you. And I actually find that I work faster and I can get more detail from photos. So there's a lot you can capture in a photo, and I find that translates nicely onto a canvas. For instance, the work I'm busy with right now is this guy named Ray, and I gave him a brief of what I was looking for. My next exhibition, I'm working on a series of men in white linen beds. And it was fantastic. He did a whole range of photos for me, and he captured the emotion perfectly. Just that sort of serene, just lying in this white linen bed, and it's brilliant. So you know, I can get all the shade, and you know, if I had to get the poor guy to come and lie here for days on end, that wouldn't be fair on either of us, really.
I understand you completely. So, defining erotic art is difficult, since perceptions of both what is erotic and what is art fluctuate with time and by culture. For example, the depiction of a phallus in some cultures is not erotic at all, but rather a symbol of potency and fertility.
True.
In fact, I guess that this is the inspiration for your Good Phallus series, is that right?
Kind of, sort of. I've always loved the image of a phallus with wings. That's, you know, it sort of always made me smile. Mm-hmm. So I decided to design one and use it as my mascot. And people really liked it, so I decided to experiment with it more and create a range of products. So it's really just tongue-in-cheek fun. Yeah. It's sort of my little bringer of luck. And yes, he's flying all over the place. I toyed around with the idea of putting some more, you know, fleshing that out and sort of having it as a symbol of freedom flyers. You know, seeing as my clientele don't contribute to overpopulation, so if they, you know, I'm still working on that little story, but for now it's just good fun. And people seem to enjoy it. Yeah, they're very popular, so it's just fun, really.
But there have been flying phalluses in antiquity, I think, in Greek art. And
Absolutely.
You're following in a remarkable tradition there, I would suspect.
Absolutely. Trying to bring it into our century, yes. Why not?
And
family jewels.
Yeah. And what seems so amazing to me is that I suspect your culture is much like ours here in America. You know, the sight of a penis, a phallus, a cock, a dick, whatever it is that you want to call it, many people in our culture consider it a corrupting influence. But you, and certainly people in antiquity did not see that, and other cultures don't see that. They see it as fun, as a potency, as fertility. How do you suppose we got off on the wrong foot there and decided to make genitalia a corrupting influence rather than something beautiful?
Well, I'd say anything you use could be a dangerous tool if used in the wrong way. You know, none of us would be here if it wasn't for a good phallus, and of course the receptacle.
Uh-huh.
But by and large, you know, I think it's something everyone think about every single day, and if you can just bring some fun into it, I think sexuality. Per se is in the trouble it is in because so many things are taboo. You know, we get taught as little children that you can't say it's your penis, you have to say it's your wee wee. It's the sort of dirty, bad word, you know. And I was certainly raised that way. You know, it's this thing that's there that you can never look at, and it has to be hidden, and it's dirty and it's shameful.
Yes.
And it took me a long time to actually become comfortable with my sexuality and realize that I'm a sexual creature too, and just sort of remove all that stigma from me. So I'm sort of, you know, bursting out and saying, hell, I'm putting wings on it and, you know, putting it out there. Just, you know? And everyone that seen my mobiles with the flying winkies and the necklaces and the lights and things like that. Everyone when has a good smile. It makes them smile, you know. So I guess I'm trying to remove the big bad taboo, you know.
Yes.
I'm
turning
turning
those cultural prohibitions on their head is, I think, the role of an artist, generally speaking. So good for you.
And I think with a lot can be done with beauty and with humor.
Yes.
And I try and incorporate both of those
uh-huh.
things into what I do. It's
right.
just my world. So that's my little contribution.
Yeah. a distinction is often made between erotic art and pornography. Both depict the body, sensuality, sexuality, even lovemaking. But there is a fundamental difference between the two forms of expression. Do you suppose that the distinction might lie in the intent as well as the message?
That's a tough one. I think it's you know, sort of dangerous to make a distinction between the two, or silly, really,
uh-huh.
unless a piece of erotic art is depicting sex.
Uh-huh.
But perhaps it is in the eye of the beholder. I mean, if you take, for instance, the work of Tom of Finland.
Yes.
Beautifully drawn images, but would certainly be considered by mainstream as pornographic.
Yes.
Some of my work has been classified as pornography, though the mind boggles as to why, because my work is more classical.
Yes.
And a lot of the sort of, you know, old master stuff, they were originally new till the sort of powers that be painted vine leaves and things over
yes.
it. But yeah, I don't really. It really depends on the content. What makes something, if it's a piece of erotic art, what would turn it into pornography?
Yeah.
I guess I wouldn't really be the right person to ask about that because I don't really consider my work pornographic.
Mm-hmm.
But some other people do
regard yours, at least some of your stuff, as such. But, you know, that's in the mind of the beholder, or the eye of the beholder, it would seem to me.
And you know, even if it makes some people frown, they definitely won't invest in my work, so uh-huh. I really don't give a damn.
Good for you.
That would be the short answer.
maybe this would be a good place for us to talk about your personal take on erotica.
Okay.
As we've already discovered, there are several plausible definitions floating around out there, but I would like to get at your specific take on it. What does erotic art mean to you?
Me personally? Well, if I think back to being a child, you know, you discover your own sexuality and things like that. And my mother had this small marble statue of a naked man pulling a thorn out of his foot. And there was just something about this white slab of marble sitting in the lounge that had my raging teen hormones go, you know. There was just something about it. And I loved depicting poses that make you wonder what the subject is thinking. I try and do a lot of portrait work and try and incorporate faces and things like that in my work. And I concentrate on the eyes. I love painting eyes that sort of have a glint in them. Yes. So you have to spend a lot of time wondering what they could have possibly been thinking while they were getting ready for that pose. And I feel the less I show, the more erotic the piece is. Like I said, I'm working on the series of Men in White Linen Beds, and it's just, you know, there's some skin in this, but it draws you in, and you wonder, did he just wake up? Is he waiting for you? That kind of thing.
Right.
So that's sort of what I toy around. And if I can get back to Tom of Finland again, he said if he wasn't aroused while he was doing a drawing, he knew it was no good. So in a way, the same applies to me. I guess personally I find something erotic about everything I produce, and when the work sells or people compliment it, I feel like the objective is achieved, and it's then their prerogative. They hang it on their wall, and that's the investment they make, and it's so flattering because they basically have said to me, look, I love it so much, I'm willing to look at it for however long time, and I'll find something new to look at every day. So that's really, it's just, I depict beauty. It happens to be erotic or classified as erotic what I do, and I'm fine with that. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Interestingly enough, you mentioned something that captured my imagination, and that is that you say that you pay special attention to faces and eyes. A lot of the erotic art that I see, the visual erotic art, really leaves faces out of it. Interestingly enough, it's bodies, it's languid poses, it's body parts, it's, you know, the contours of bodies and whatnot. But faces and eyes in particular, are not part of it. And I wonder why that is, and why you choose to incorporate that.
Well, I can answer that. It's interesting. I recently did the Sexpo here in Cape Town. It's a big expo of all sex-related stuff, and they invited me to be part of it. And it was interesting to hear the comments of people. And for a lot of people, they can't invest in a work of art where the face is visible, because it's too specific.
Interesting.
If it's a side view or just sort of a bit of a face, that's fine. But they seem to be uncomfortable with investing in some stranger's face in their house. But I want to turn that around again, and that's what I like doing with my collages. You know, using a flower and a face and things like that, because there's a lot you can read into it. And then also using a face, and in the next block a body, and it's sort of that play on what that face is thinking and what he's thinking about. Maybe he's thinking about the body. So it's just experimentation, really. I've been surprised that some of the stuff that sell first and things I thought would sell right away take longer. So your clientele can be really fickle sometimes, but that is the reason why you don't see a lot of faces in erotic art. People
That's
try
an interesting
and maybe
thing.
Maybe
I never
it's
thought
also
about that.
The shame thing, in a way, you know, maybe people, when they buy something like that or whatever, maybe if you can't see the face, it doesn't make it so in your face. I don't know. That might be a reason. But that's what I think. That's my sort of theory.
It's interesting because a lot of classical erotic art or classical art that has erotic nature, at least from my point of view, like the Pietà or the ecstasy of Saint Teresa. I mean, they're in a swoon. They're all, they're in a sex swoon. I mean, that's what it looks like in their faces, and it's so compelling and to my mind, erotic. And that's what seems to be so missing, often actually in pornography as well as erotic art, is that that realization that realization that pleasure is being is being consumed by the entire body as opposed to by a part.
Absolutely. Well, really, that is what I'd like to bring into my work. And it's an evolution, and more, especially with my new work now, it's bringing that whole sensuality and excitement around the body back. And really, in the you know, the pieces you spoke about, they were in a biblical rapture. So it was, yes, it was somehow fine to do it, you know, in that context, because you know, let the healer touch or feel a kind of thing.
Yes.
But if it's pure sexuality, then it's wrong, you know. Yeah. And but we are evolving, so it's a great time to be alive.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. It's a fascinating thing, because I as you know, I also produce a line of gay porn, for lack of a better term. And one of the things that I committed myself to early on was to depict the whole person, faces in particular. In fact, people used to comment about my work, and they'd say, well, how do we know that guy is actually getting fucked? And I'd say, you know what? I said, if you can't look in their face and see that, then there is something desperately, desperately wrong with you. And I said, the comment that you're asking me, I mean, the question that you're asking me says volumes about our industry, because so much of it is faked. And, I actually want to capture an orgasm, I'd rather shoot the face rather than, you know, pulsating other parts of the body.
The money shot.
Exactly that.
The money shot.
Exactly that. So for me, the money shot is the facial expression. I guess I'm curious along those lines, but there you have it.
Good
Would you say that you are compelled to create erotic art? Or is this, it doesn't seem like this is just a hobby for you. This is like a real passion, as you say, right?
Absolutely. I think it started when I was a child and growing up in sort of a repressed society, and realizing I was gay, and obviously the object of your affection is the male body. Mm-hmm. And you know, the struggle you go through and being ostracized and all that kind of stuff, and finding out you have this talent. Well, I realized very early on that I had a talent to create stuff. Mm-hmm. It was a natural progression, I think. It's always sort of been at the back of my mind, and I always wondered if I could do something like that. And here I am, you know, like they say, the rest is history. So I don't really see myself doing anything else. This is what I will do. I found my favorite medium, oil on canvas, and it is what I do. It's what I don't even need a hobby, because I just love what I do so much.
Right. Do you recall the first piece that you did that was obviously erotic? What was your response about that? I mean, coming from a sexually repressed background, or at least not, you know, wildly openly sexually, were you afraid to show other people? Were you proud of that? Can you tell us a little bit more about that first experience?
Well, if I have to think about it, you know, you always sort of slip it in. That sounded wrong. I used to draw these scrapbooks when I was a kid, of Miss Piggy and her husband.
Uh-huh.
But the husband was always extremely buff, and he was always in a speedo, and he was always way more glamorous than Miss Piggy.
Uh-huh.
And they went to all these places, and they got married, and it, you know, it was in the 80s, so it was all the big hair and all that kind of stuff. And I had so much fun with these books, and I remember being absolutely sort of not completely, well, aroused by drawing this body, and of course it's in the context of Miss Piggy and Mr. Piggy, and
right,
I could show it to my family, and no one ever thought a thing about it.
Uh-huh.
So I guess that would be the very first erotic art I did, was drawing a buff pig. A well-hung buff pig. I should look for those books. I actually have them somewhere. It's good fun.
Well,
so that would be the very first thing, yes.
Well, on that note, I think we are out of time. May I invite you to come back next week?
You sure can. My pleasure.
Oh, I'd love to, because I have so many more questions. So listen, we'll see you again next week. Thank you again for joining us.
Thanks, Richard. Goodbye to you and everyone.
See you
next
week.
Lovely talking to you. Bye.
Holy cow, what a great show. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Tune in next week for part two of my conversation with Moxie Hart and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. In the meantime, be sure to visit him at www.moxieheart.com.
Tell you what, want me to show you how to use cosmetics?
Do you suppose that could wait till the end of the show? Holy cow. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't? I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself and all the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you just better call off the search right now. Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Take a look at my product review page. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. Look for the My Stockroom tab right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Before we conclude, I would like to remind you of the toll-free, lickety-split, sex advice podcast voicemail hotline at 866-422-5680. Got a question or a comment? Want to rant or rave? Or perhaps you just need to talk dirty for a minute or two? Hey, why not get it off your chest and give Dr. Dick a call at 866-422-5680. No need to be shy, my friends, because this is voicemail. No human is going to answer your call, least of all me. And calling the hotline will surely get you a place in one of my podcasts. Be sure to look for Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. Once in the podcast section, all you have to do is search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe, and while you're there, feel free to leave a comment.
Look, I'll let you put on my earrings. You're going to see how pretty you're going to be.
You just don't give up, do you? Okay. Well, maybe just this once. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.